clients are really thirsty to find out what's going on in the market because it's so difficult to figure out today. So I think it's an opportunity for brokers to set themselves apart, really create some good data sets and impart some great advice to clients.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I am your host, as always, Yona Weiss. I am super excited, which I don't think I've ever said that before, but super excited to be here with another incredible guest. I have with us Bob Nackel. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Yona. Well, I'm super excited to be here also. And it's so great to chat with you. This is the first time we're on a Zoom. We haven't met physically yet, but because of social media, I feel like I know you already. So this is great.
Likewise. It's so true. And you've only really become active on social media in the past year or so, to the extent that, you know, now you're like an icon, not only in New York City, as you've been for decades, but in the social media world, you've become like an icon as such. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it just was not a believer in social media, and folks were after me for a long time to become involved. I took the plunge on January 1st and just have been, you know, completely blown away by the reach that social media has, the relationships that I've made with people, the opportunities that have come my way because of it. I'm a huge believer in it. And I think, you know, it's something that you have to figure out where your proper cadence is with it, because it can get overwhelming at times, but it's a great thing. And I'm really thrilled that I'm a part of the community and that everybody has welcomed me so nicely.
I mean, that's incredible. For just a little background for our listeners who may not know, and this is probably just an incredible insight. The fact that someone like you has had the career that you've had, has taken to social media just recently and has seen the benefits of it. I'm, you know, a constant promoter of social media and the benefits that can come along with it, the community that can be made. But for our listeners who don't know, I mean, Bob is probably recognized as one of the greatest, if not the top commercial real estate broker of all time. I mean, with over $23 billion in sales, it's just incredible. In New York City, you started the Massey Nackel brokerage, which was then bought out, have been in New York City investment sales for, you know, a few decades. And it's just incredible to see someone with your caliber who's then come to social media, just like one of the guys.
Yeah, well, thanks, Yona, for that. And I will say, you said Nackel Massey. It would have been Nackel Massey if not for losing a coin flip. But it was Massey Nackel. But yeah, in fact, we're filming this on July 12th. In 4 days, I start year number 40 doing this and have loved it. And, you know, one of the things that prompted me to get on social media, I'm a big believer in constantly being introspective, looking at your strengths and weaknesses, try to enhance your strengths and work on improving the things you're weak at. And one of my biggest weaknesses actually is technology. For a long time, I was happy to just get my computer on, get my cell phone to work. So, you know, realizing that technology is one of my weaknesses and wanting to improve that. I think part of my fear or aversion to social media was that you had to be a little bit technologically savvy in order to do it. And, you know, so that was one of the things I wanted to work on. Another reason why I got involved. And still, when I, you know, I do Twitter spaces and I'm stumbling and fumbling around trying to figure out how to get it to work. But so far, we've been doing okay with it. But it's, you know, you work on your weaknesses to try to improve and get better. And that was one of the areas that I was lacking in. So, you know, it kind of feels good to have gotten some level of success on social media because it was a real weak spot for me.
Well, certainly. I mean, that's the introspection. I love that because we're constantly learning. You know, as humans, we are thirsting for knowledge. We're thirsting for something new all the time. And oftentimes we're drawn to news, we're drawn to, and that can sometimes instill fear in people and bring out the worst. But when you're just introspecting into yourself and not looking on the outside, saying, well, what are my weaknesses? What can I get better at? How can I become, and you know, kudos to you. I commend you on taking this because someone who's been in the business for 40 years is, you know, you need to be constantly changing and looking at what's happening in the environment. But I would say there are not many people who have been in the, you know, especially commercial real estate business happens to be more of an archaic business. The business models, I know, are probably a lot of things are still the same as they have been since 40 years ago.
I'm still the biggest analog guy I know. You know, I write things down. You look at my call sheets for this week. There's my tech stack right there, right? So, but I am trying to adopt things. Technology certainly is very, very powerful. You know, I have my map room, which lays out a map of, which deals with everything construction and development related in the city. And I'm talking to a couple of data scientists now about adopting an AI application that is going to create some really groundbreaking stuff that I've never seen or heard done before, where we're going to compare all these metrics that have happened within the development market to all kinds of macroeconomic things, the price of gold, equity prices, inflation, things to try to look for trends and see if there's anything that can forecast an increase in activity in the land market. So some really cool stuff we're working on, and it's forcing me to adopt technology, get out of my comfort zone. And it's really cool. If you see what can be done with this stuff, it's really kind of amazing.
That only comes with experience, you know, knowing the amount of transaction volumes, the amount of knowledge that you have. You talk about this map room that you've created, which is essentially breaking down all of New York City into, you know, on a map, which lays out every deal, every property, essentially, right? That, and the transactions that's happened there. You've transacted yourself. I think I read a stat over 2,000 individual transactions. You'll probably give me the exact number, but
as of last week, 2,259.
Amazing. Incredible. And with your brokerage itself, I think it was over 6,000 transactions. So you've had the experience. You know, New York City's big, but it's not that. It's not that big. I mean, there are probably a lot more properties than 6,000, but the fact that you have that market knowledge and that specialization, which you talk about a lot, you talk about not just market specialization, but asset specialization, knowing, you know, what you know. How have you been able to translate that into others, you know, building a team? And you built this very successful brokerage that later, again, was sold, and but are still in the business. You know, you're still doing it year after year.
Yeah, no, look, I think the realization that we are in the information business, not the real estate business, is important. Mm. You know, the real estate just happens to be the thing that the information is based on. But we look at the market very, very analytically. For instance, I know in Manhattan, south of 96th Street, there's 27,649 buildings. I know that in the four boroughs, excluding Staten Island, no disrespect to Staten Island, we think that market operates more like New Jersey than New York. But in the four boroughs, 165,742 investment properties. I know that in Manhattan, the average turnover rate over 39 years has been 2.6% on average of the total stock. And in the outer boroughs, it's been 2.2% of the total stock. I try to look at things very statistically rather than talk about the market with adjectives, because then I let the person I'm speaking to draw a conclusion about how the market is. If I say that sales volume is down 26% last year, one person might think, oh, that's not so bad. Another person might think, wow, that's terrible. Right. So, but let the listener make that decision based on real data. So I think, you know, it's part of what I think separates the really great real estate folks from the good or mediocre real estate folks is a grasp and an understanding of the business and expertise, understanding what it is you're doing. You know, I love reading stuff about what makes companies great, what makes individuals great, what makes a team great. And it's really mastering your craft is something that propels people to achieve great successes. And I think having that understanding of really what you're dealing with on a very, very visceral level is important.
Sure. Now, you've seen a lot of markets, right? A lot of changes in the markets, interest rates going up and down and up and down and up and down over the years. How do you see today different than it has been in the past? I mean, there's so many factors involved there. And I know this is probably a pretty common question you get about what do you see in the market? But really what I'm trying to get down is, do you see anything that stands out today more than it has in the past?
Yeah, well, I think this is the fourth major correction that I've lived through. The S&L crisis, early 90s, excuse me, the recession in the early 2000s, the GFC, 08, 09. This correction is very, very different in two main ways. One is the way in which lenders are dealing with their problems. you know, SNL crisis. The banks were going through a 2-year or 3-year foreclosure process, taking title, hiring brokers to sell, early 2000s and GFC. Banks decided not to go through that process. They would prefer to just sell the paper. They were hiring brokers to do that. This time around, they're doing everything in a much more under the radar screen type of way, trying to make quiet deals, talking to their customers about deals, not wanting too much public notice or transparency regarding what their book really consists of. And that has been a very, very tangible difference between today's circumstances and the past corrections we've had. And the other difference is that in those past corrections, all product types were declining in value, and it just was to varying degrees. Today, different product types are moving in different directions. And I think that's a function of this being the longest correction we've ever had. Prior to this, you know, we had the SNL crisis was a 4-year correction. Here, we've been in correction mode essentially since October of 2015. We had a 12-month vacation from the correction, which was the second half of 01 and the first half of 21 and the first half of 22. But based on the interest rate increases and spreads blowing out, that exerted some more downward pressure on prices. And, you know, here we are all this time later. We're now, you know, effectively 8 years into a correction, almost 8 years. Because of that, different product types are performing differently. The retail sector, I think, is a positive sector today. Mm-hmm. It's been hammered for years and years, but for the first time in 5 years, I'm getting calls from investors looking for retail deals. Wow. The perception is rents have stopped going down. Leasing activity is picking up in that sector. So that's viewed as a positive sector. In the multifamily space, there's tremendous demand, notwithstanding the political headwinds that exist. And it's really unbelievable how public policy has so tangibly impacted how that market functions. Right. But notwithstanding those political headwinds, tremendous demand in that space. You know, the office sector, very, very opaque. That one's going to take the longest to work through for a variety of reasons. The land market has basically dried up for office, hotel, and residential rentals for a variety of different reasons in each of those spaces. But condo land is still moving fairly well. Values are down in Manhattan by 20 to 30% just since last September. But at that new price point, there's still a lot of activity. We closed 2 deals last week, signed a contract on another big 172,000-foot site. That there's stuff happening. So it's really interesting in how in the past, everything was going in the same direction. Today, everything is kind of going in different directions. And that's why I think it's so important as a broker, an intermediary, an advisor. Clients are really thirsty to find out what's going on in the market because it's so difficult to figure out today. So I think it's an opportunity for brokers to set themselves apart, really create some good data sets and impart some great advice to clients.
Well, we could spend a couple hours unpacking that 2-minute monologue right there about the differences in this market. But I want to focus specifically on the last thing that you just said there about standing apart, setting yourself apart by providing advice and providing the data to your clients. And anyone who's out there who's a broker who may be hearing this and thinking, okay, well, how do I do that? How do I set myself apart from everyone else? Because in the end of the day, brokers who have been, you know, who are in sales are, you know, oftentimes struggling, you know, just trying to hustle, trying to get deals, trying to get in front of buyers, and they're competing against so many others doing the same thing. So it's very difficult to really set yourself apart in that way. What would you say is, you know, a couple ways that you would suggest for someone who, not just people starting out, but anyone who's in this industry, you know, to stand yourself apart? I know you've taken to social media and become an icon in that respect, providing knowledge, you know, the Knackle Nuggets, you're bringing back that stuff, you're showing the data sources, but for someone else who doesn't necessarily have that stature.
Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? There are thousands of people trying to do what we do. And that's whether you're a broker, an investor, a developer, a banker, a lawyer. So how do you set yourself apart? How do you differentiate yourself? And the best way to differentiate yourself is through specialization. Become an expert at something. If you read Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, he says the difference between every great company and every good company, or a great individual and a good individual, is the difference is having something or focusing on something that you can do better than anybody else in the world. And those great companies, their whole focus is on achieving that goal of being the very best at something. So how do you become the best at something? You become a specialist. You know a market. I always tell people, get something that is as narrow as it possibly can be so that you can easily articulate what you do, how you do it, and that you have an understanding of the market and you have capability within that market segment. It has to be large enough so that you can make a good living right. doing it. You could be the biggest expert in one building, mm-hmm. but you can't make a living that way.
Right.
But have a target set of things that you're going to specialize in that is very, very narrowly focused, whether it's product type, geography. At Massey Knackel, we started the company based on a geographic specialization. In the mid-80s, that was very important because the amount and quality of publicly available information was horrible. Mm-hmm. So to focus on one area, get to know everything that was happening in that area, who was buying, who was selling, what zoning changes were happening, what new developments were going on, what new big tenants were moving into the area, these things enabled you to differentiate yourself. Today, publicly available information is all over the place. Right. You can go online, find somebody's home address, their cell number, their shoe size, whatever you want. So today, I think product specialization is a much more effective way of differentiating yourself than geographic specialization is. I layer a geographic specialization on top of a product specialization, mm-hmm. but it's having a narrow focus so that you can establish a very, very high level of expertise within that arena. And then that differentiation leads to a competitive advantage.
Right. It's also credibility.
Ultimately, that's what you want.
Yeah. I mean, it's also credibility, because if you're someone that's saying, oh yeah, I'm an expert in everything, everywhere, no one's really going to take you seriously. I mean, with all due respect, so you have brokers out there saying, I've got, you know, a deal, a multifamily in Florida and an office building in New Jersey. And it's just like, what are you trying to do?
The jack of all trades, master of none. And people have been telling me for a couple of years now, Bob, you got to get to Miami. You got to go to Miami. You're selling all this land. You're the top land guy in New York City. There's a lot of land being sold in Miami. And I say to them, you know what? Why would I do that? If I owned a piece of land in Miami, I wouldn't hire me to sell it. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about the market. Why would I do that? So I think you have to, it's very appealing to look at an opportunity and say, hey, I could make money doing that. Very important to be able to say no to things. Harvard professor Bill Urey wrote a great book called The Power of a Positive No. And you have to be able to say no and not get off on tangents. It's so easy to get distracted in our business. And I think you have to do everything possible to stay disciplined. One of the main reasons mm-hmm. why I work with a broker coach, I work with Rod Santamassimo from the Massimo Group, have for 12 years, because I feel like I'm a very disciplined person, but nobody is that disciplined. So Rod helps me maintain my discipline, encourages me, say no to three things every week, because otherwise you're going to get pulled in all these directions. But you have to stay focused and stay focused on what Colin says. He refers to that concept of what can you do better than anyone in the world? That's your mm-hmm. hedgehog concept. And you keep going back to that hedgehog concept time after time, day after day, week after week, month after month. And that's what will allow you to ascend to a lofty position within any industry.
Wow. These are powerful Knackel nuggets that you're dropping over here, Bob. I got to tell you. And it's actually the second time Rod has been mentioned on this show in the past few weeks. We had Reed Bennett from Chicago, who also mentioned Rod. It's fascinating because it just goes to show you the top performers have coaches. You know, this is such a message we reiterate over and over on this show. Do not think that you can go at it alone.
Yeah, Yona, look, I met Rod 12 years ago. He was writing Brokers Who Dominate. I get this call out of the blue from this guy, Rod Santamassimo. He's like, hey, Bob, I'm writing a book. Everybody tells me I have to include you in the book. Tell me about your story. I'm doing these phone interviews with him. And I got around to asking him. I said, so Rod, you know, how many books have you written? What are you, an author? What else do you write about? He's, no, I'm not an author. I'm a broker coach. And I said, broker coach? What the heck is that? I never heard about that before. And, you know, he told me what he did, how he does it, things like that. And it occurred to me, I said, hey, you know, Michael Jordan has a coach.
Right.
Tiger Woods has a coach. Olympic athletes have coaches. What the heck? Let me give it a try. And you know what? I went in with one objective. And that objective was to make the same amount of money, but spend less time doing it. And actually working with Rod rekindled my passion for the business. I ended up spending more time working and spending more time with my family, just working much more effectively. And it's been terrific. And Rod will be my coach, you know, for the balance of my career. No doubt about that.
That's incredible. Well, as promised, Bob, we try to keep this short. This has been amazing. But as promised, we did mention that not only are you the one, you know, the top commercial real estate broker in New York City of all time, but you also happen to be a self-proclaimed Seinfeld aficionado. And it wouldn't be right because I also grew up different periods in our lives. You're probably about at least 10 years older than me, but I enjoyed Seinfeld quite a bit when I was in high school.
If you're a New Yorker, how could you not like Seinfeld?
You know, it's amazing. I actually had a roommate in college who was from New York as well. And we used to watch together. Anyways, long story short, we're going to throw out a few pieces of Seinfeld trivia out there. These are just things that came to my mind that I know, not extremely obscure. So I have a pretty confident that you're going to get all of these, and feel free to throw any back at me. But without further ado, let's just jump right in before we get to the final four, Bob. So question for you, and this is a two-part question.
Okay.
All right. Which board game did George play with the Bubble Boy?
Okay, that would be Trivial Pursuit.
All right, you got it. And the second answer, on what question and answer did that board game end tragically?
Game ended, you know, I don't remember exactly what the question was, who invaded someplace else, but the correct answer was the Moors. But there was a misprint on the card and it said the Moops. And that caused the Bubble Boy, Donald Sagan, by the way, was his name, but caused George and the Bubble Boy to have a fight, which popped the bubble and all hell broke loose.
Oh, so wow, amazing. Okay. You were 2 for 2. But again, I guess that you'd be pretty good at these. Okay. I'm going to go with another easy one relatively, and then we're going to get to a little bit of a hard one. How did George's, and again, we're going with George here, we're on a roll. How did George's fiance die tragically? And again, this is another tragic, I don't know why.
Yeah, tragic one, but unfortunately, George was very thrifty and didn't want to really get married to Susan anyway. So when they were picking out wedding invitations, he immediately went to the back of the book to the less expensive ones, which were out of stock, but they had one or two boxes left in the warehouse. They stopped making them because they used very, very inexpensive glue that you had to lick significantly to get them to stick. Unfortunately, Susan licked all of those. There was a toxin in the glue and she expired, according to the doctor, because of the toxic glue in the very inexpensive envelopes.
Right, which unfortunately ended their marriage before it even happened. All right, this is going to be a fun one. What type of bread did Jerry hang out of a window with a fishing pole?
Okay, well, actually, it was George who had the fishing pole in the Ross's townhouse, and it was the number one bread from Schnitzer's Bakery, and it was the marble rye.
Okay, he's just showing off at this point.
Okay, you know, now you said I could ask you, if you get this one, I will be so impressed. You get $100 to the charity of your choice if you can tell me the name of the elderly woman that Jerry stole the marble rye from.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm not going to get it. Sorry.
Okay, her name was Mabel Choate, and that's a very, very tough question because you don't know, they never say her name on that particular episode where Jerry steals the marble rye, but she happens to be on the board in Del Boca Vista down in Florida and remembers that Jerry stole the marble rye, voted to impeach Jerry's father from the home ownership board. And that's when they say her name, Mabel Choate. So
amazing. Well, you actually answered a different question, which I had right here written down, which what was the name of Jerry's parents, a retirement community? And you just threw it in there, Del Boca Vista. So you got it. I did not remember Mabel Choate, but that's
there
awesome.
Was actually, that is a question I'd have to answer in two parts because when they first referenced going down to Florida, it was something like phase 2 of the Pines or something like that was the first complex. But then the second one, which is much more popular because the Costanzas were going to move down there, was Del Boca Vista.
All right. Amazing. Wow, Bob, this is awesome. Well, I appreciate your hilarity of this how this episode took a turn with the Seinfeld references. This is awesome. And it's great to see that even with all the time selling thousands of investment properties, you have time to have some hobbies in Seinfeld trivia. Bob, we're going to transition to what we call the final four. And these are four questions I ask all my guests, which first one is, what's the worst job that you ever had?
Well, the truth is I've had only one job other than being in commercial real estate. And that was when I was about 15 years old. I had a paper route in Maywood, New Jersey, delivering some free weekly paper. That lasted 2 weeks. And I said, this isn't for me. Other than that, that's the only job that I've had other than the first job I had between freshman and sophomore year in college, working in market research at CB, went back my next 2 summers and then started with them full time when I got out of college. So only had that 1 2-week paper route, and that was not so great, but the only other job other than real estate.
Amazing. Wow. That's consistency, right? 40 years of just going at it, sticking with it. Good for you. Second question, what's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned online this week, and I mentioned Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, which, you know, absolutely is a great book. That was very instrumental in a lot of the ways that we approached tactics and strategy relative to Massey Knackel. But I also think Winning Friends and Influencing People, Dale Carnegie's book, was just unbelievable. I read that very, very early on in my career. And I think stuff like that, you know, I have a reading list of several books, The Power of a Positive No, the Persuasion books that Bob Cialdini from University of Arizona has written. He's probably a leading authority on persuasion in the world. Books on selling, negotiating, Zig Ziglar, things that teach people how to get by in life, how to succeed in life. I think that should be a whole curriculum. And I've been putting notes down about what would make a great college curriculum. But, you know, I think so much of the time that is spent in college is not useful. You know, knowing today whether prepaid rent is a debit or a credit on a balance sheet isn't going to help most people unless you're an accountant, but understanding how to interact with people, how to get along, how to become friends with people, how to understand, how to be a good listener. So many life lessons should be taught at the college level, because I think whether you're a salesperson or you're a banker or a lawyer or in the financial services business, you work on Wall Street, wherever, there's so many lessons that can be learned for people in the business community, and learning things that will stay with you for a lifetime. So I think there's room for a college curriculum that really could benefit people very, very significantly. And I'd like to be part of making that happen.
Awesome. Well, and I love how you fleshed out the question into that, because there are so many books out there that can really just change people's lives. And, you know, when better to start than when people are young, because they're not getting that education in high, forget about college, high school either. I mean, it's unfortunate, but you know, that it needs a change, and who better to make the change than Bob Knackel, right? Third question.
I'd love to be part of that.
Third question for you is, what's a skill or talent that you would like to learn? And this could be anything.
Crazily, I would love to learn how to play the piano. I've never played a musical instrument. And it's interesting. I've never been asked that question before, but if I could do one skill that I don't have, I would love to be able to sit down at a piano and play. And I understand that that aptitude relative to musical instruments is closely tied to math. I'm very good with numbers, but I've never played a musical instrument. So that was an interesting question, though.
There you go. And surprisingly, it's actually a pretty common answer that people give. Very successful people I've found are intrigued by music and who have never, you know, been successful in many areas in life, but have not pursued music. And like I said, surprisingly, it's one of the most common answers that I get on the show is playing a musical instrument. Not specifically piano, but oftentimes that's the one as well. So it's just fascinating to me. And I've delved into that a few times as well, just trying to figure out why that is. But we'll leave it there and we'll come back to that maybe another time. But I want to ask you the fourth and final question, which is, what does success mean to you?
What does success mean to me? You know, I think it is achieving a deep sense of peace. And I think that comes from knowing that you did the right thing all the time. You help people, you helped other people achieve success. You know, one of the things that the whole Massey Knackel experience was such a nice thing on so many levels, but the thing that I'm most proud of from that experience is that the culture that we created, one in which You know, if one of our employees got married, there'd be 50 people there. People would go on vacation together. They'd get a summer house together. So that culture was one. And the other thing is that today in New York City, there are 14 investment sales businesses or divisions that are either owned by or run by people who learn the business at Massey Knackel. And for us to have had a small part in the development of these people, training them, teaching them the business, and seeing them go on to the success that they've had is extraordinarily rewarding. So I think, you know, success is feeling a sense of peace that you did the right thing, you were a good person, you helped people, you were a positive influence in society and in the environments in which you live and work. You were good with your friends, you were good with your family, your community, a church or synagogue, and just you did the right thing by people. I think that provides a sense of peace. And I think if you find that sense of peace, then you've achieved success.
Love it. That's incredible. Love the definition. And we're going to keep it short and we'll keep it on that. But Bob, how can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they want to?
Sure. Well, you can always reach me by email. That's the best way to get me is bob.nackal, K-N-A-K-A-L, at jll.com. So I'm relatively responsive on email. Plus, you can find me on different social media platforms and, you know, always happy to hear from folks.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure to put that in the show notes and all the links and handles to your social media, which, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn have been two of the biggest ones I know you've been quite active on recently and providing a lot of great content and not just inspirational, but educational content as well. So thank you for all that you do. And I appreciate you making the time today, Bob. It's really, really been a pleasure.
Yeah, Yon, it was great to be with you. And hopefully we'll meet someday and we could do some Seinfeld trivia over a cocktail or two.
There you go. Sounds good. I'll have to make it up for the loss that I have on this round, but we'll get you next time. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in once again all the way to the end. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask.
Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.